All right, good afternoon. Welcome to the April 15th, 2024 Major Mondays webinar, Practical Advice for What to Do with Hemp One Demands. And good afternoon, everyone. As always, this is live question and answer. So if you have any questions, go ahead and type them in the GoToWebinar box and we'll pop them out at the end and address them. So some of these introductory slides, I'm going to go through relatively quickly because they're something of a copy from prior presentations. So a lot of these basics we've covered in prior webinars, but added to this particular webinar are practical examples. We're going to go over various HEMP 1 scenarios and what my recommended responses would be, which will hopefully be a little more illustrative. So these introductory slides are going to go through rather quickly. Again, there's prior webinars that go more into depth, but then we can hopefully get to the meat of everything and get to the good stuff before we wrap up. So, what is the health insurance matching program? So it's how the health insurer gets reimbursed for comp treatment. And there's, I just want to note that there are separate processes for no fault reimbursement. You know, for instance, if the no fault carrier, say Geico, you know, were to seek reimbursement of amounts they paid as part of that first 50K, which technically they probably shouldn't be paying since comp is primary, they would sue in civil court or they would proceed in no fault arbitration. But this is specifically, as indicated by the name, health insurance matching program. This is specifically for the health insurer. So, you know, your Aetnas and Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shields of the world. Comes from workers' compensation law sections 13A, 13D, and 13H. You can also find the pertinent regulations on it in 12 NYCRR 325-5 and 325-6, colloquially referred to as the HIMP rules and regulations. So why is it called the matching program? Why do we have this weird system for getting reimbursed? So the health insurer's claim has to match a claim before the board. They submit a reimbursement request to the board. If you look on the HIMP 1 form, it'll say date reimbursement request filed. And you might be asking yourself, how does that differ from date reimbursement request served? You know, the thing that they sign under part one. The answer is the reimbursement request filed date is the date they submitted the request to the board for a match. And then the board is going to respond, you know, the health insurer produces data, social security number, you know, date of loss, claimant's name, address, date of birth, all that stuff. And then the board will either notify them of a full or partial match. They can only serve the HIMP 1 form if they get a full match from the board. The HIMP 1 demand usually has three important dates. The date the reimbursement request was filed, the match date, and the service date. Those are all three different things. So what is the HIMP 1 demand itself? And this time I included a little picture, and I couldn't go too big with it or else it would cut into my image here, but hopefully you guys can take a decent glance at it. You've probably seen this before if you are attending this webinar. That is what it looks like. So it's a workers' comp board form that serves as the first pleading in the HIMP 1 case. It should contain most of the details from eCase, case info tab, you know, that initial introductory tab when you log into eCase. And if you look at the boxes under part one of the HIMP form, you'll see all of that data sort of matches up to what's in the eCase case info tab. The health insurer will have access to this if they got a full match before serving the HIMP as required. So if there are a bunch of blanks in that part one with all those boxes at the top, that is a strong indication that a match probably was not obtained and the request is illegitimate. So just something to file away. There are three parts. There's the part one demand. That's that big box at the top with all the little fields in it. There's the part two carrier's response. You'll see all of those listed objections. And then there's the part three arb request. That is what the health insurer is going to fill out and submit to the American Arbitration Association if the carrier objects or fails to object timely and they can't resolve it amicably. What they usually include with it, the HIMP 1 form, proof of service of the demand. They'll include a copy of the envelope and sometimes an affidavit of service and a payment ledger. Technically, the rules and regulations also require them to submit proof of acceptance of the claim or ANCR or ODNCR. I rarely ever see them do this, and I've also never seen an arbitrator hold it against them for failing to do so. It's just one of those objections you raise just to throw stuff at the wall and see if you can't leverage something. So how is the demand made? Well, the health insurer is required to use the HIMP 1 form with part one completed. 12 NYCRR 325-6.3C specifies what should be included. They require ICD-10 and CPT codes, the date of payment for services, the amount actually billed by the provider, the amount paid by the health insurer, et cetera. So there's a whole paragraph of things they are supposed to include with the demand. The HIMP form itself includes a certification that notice was mailed to the carrier and proof of service is attached. Sometimes they include this, sometimes they don't. If they don't, you can raise that as an objection for defective form and service of the demand. Again, I don't think an arbitrator is really going to side with you, but it's more about how much shock and awe can you create for leverage purposes. And on that form we looked at on the prior slide, you'll see next to the signature line, it says date served. You have 90 days from that day to do something. And we're going to talk about what the various responses you can do are. So just real quickly, how might you see one of these guys coming? So if you see a health insurer and HIMP agent, here are some common names and I'm going to give you a list of them in a following slide. As a party of interest in e-case, a reimbursement request has been submitted to the board. That does not mean they have gotten a full or partial match. It just means they've submitted the reimbursement request. They more than likely have gotten a full match. The WHO code of H9 will usually be the health insurer. VH will usually be the HIMP agent. Similar to a TPA for HIMP demands, their designated representative that'll handle the arbitration and making the demand. So that's a little screenshot of what it would look like under the case info tab on eCase, at least on the old version of eCase, but the party of interest tab is still a thing and it's gonna look very similar. All right, common HIMP parties. I promised I'd give you guys this. So here are some names that if you see it should set off a few alarm bells. Anthem, United Healthcare, WellPoint, Aetna, Excellus, CDC World Trade Center Health Fund, GHI, which is Group Health Incorporated, HPI of Greater New York Health, or I'm sorry, HIP of Greater New York, Health Insurance Plan of Greater New York, Affinity Health Plan, and Fidelis Care. Those are just some of the common ones. Common HIMP agents, big one, HCSG, Healthcare Subrogation Group, Rawlings Company, Meridian Resource Company, HMS Workers Comp, or Gainwell Technologies. Those are sort of the same entity at this point. So those are your common HIMP agents and HIMP carriers. So let's talk about some common scenarios. When might you be able to see a HIMP 1 demand possibly being in the works? ER treatment on the date of loss or early in the case. This is by far the most common HIMP scenario. Claimant gets taken via ambulance to the ER. ER doctor doesn't know that it's a workers' comp claim. They bill the private health insurance, and then suddenly down the road, the health insurance gets a match and serves you with a demand for reimbursement. Very, very common. Denied claims. Somebody's paying for the treatment. They usually, if they got a full match from the board, they should know it's a denied case, which should mean that they don't make the demand. The case being established or accepted is a prerequisite to being able to serve the demand itself, but it doesn't always stop them. Disputed consequential injury sites. Claimant continues to treat while causal relationship is under litigation. Say it's a foot injury and now they want to tack on the consequential knee and you are currently litigating that. Someone's paying for the knee treatment and you can bet a HIMP on demand is going to follow. MG2 or C4 off denials. Surgeries or diagnostic studies where we pay the provider but not necessarily the facility. So sometimes you'll see on your EOB forms or your payment ledger, you know, payment to Dr. So-and-so, and then you'll see a HIMP for the same date of loss, the same treatment, same ICD-10, same CPT. All of the information will be the same, except that the provider will be, you know, NYU Hospital. That's the difference between the provider themselves, you know, the individual treating doctor, or the facility bill, and those are usually two different things. CA.1B is resolved in our favor. Again, claimant is not responsible for treatment, so somebody's paying for that, and they may not have the wherewithal to recognize that that means that the bill is not payable. Cautionary note here, this is a somewhat common resolution strategy for Section 32s, sort of in the situation I just described where we have litigated consequential injury sites or claimed injury sites from the outset that we never accepted. So a lot of times I'll see a Section 32 accept injury sites just to get the deal done. I would be very, very wary of doing that until you fully assess the HIMP exposure. So in other words, look at what the treatment is to that injury site that's currently disputed. Look at how much the medical bills are, what you can reasonably anticipate that somebody else paid in the interim. Because remember, they have a year from ANCR or acceptance to serve the HIMP on demand, provided that they got a match within 3 years of the date of payment. So the moment the notice of approval is filed that says carrier accepts foot or you submit the settlement documents that says carrier accepts the foot as compensable. The moment that happens, you've just given them another year to serve you with a demand. So it might make more sense to just offer to pay the bills without an admission of liability as part of the settlement. But I do really want you to think about that before just going, yeah, we're settling it. Why not throw in another injury site if it gets it done? Ask yourself this question. If we are not responsible and the claimant is not responsible per Section 13F, how does this doctor get paid? And if we're not paying and the claimant isn't paying, you can bet somebody is. So that's your most common HIMP scenario. Investigating the treatment. This is not only a right, it is something of an obligation. So you can find it in 6.3F of the HIMP rules and regulations. It authorizes us to request the records from the provider. The provider has to supply the records within 14 days or they might be subject to penalties. The carrier can issue a subpoena under Workers' Comp Law Section 119 to compel production. There's a cost-benefit analysis associated here. How much clarity are the records going to provide? Like, is most of it already in the board files such that we can make a pretty good guess that the treatment is causally related? Could they potentially even defeat our objection? Is there an argument right now that it's not related because the provider, you know, is not board authorized and never produced the records and the claimant has pre-existing conditions like, you know, sciatica or something? Could we potentially argue that this is a pre-existing chronic condition that this doctor is treating for based on the CPT or ICD-10 codes? And then maybe our worst case scenario is we serve a demand for the records, they come back and it references our data loss. So there's a bit of a common sense determination here. The health insurer cannot unreasonably refuse to give you an extension to get the records, but you cannot use the records request solely to delay reimbursement or arbitration. And I'll just emphasize this last paragraph here. The arbitrator is usually going to find their payment ledger to be sufficient, provided it has all the required info under 6.3C. So the burden is on us to investigate and obtain records. Do not be afraid to ask for an extension if needed. As I mentioned above, they cannot unreasonably refuse to grant that request. The arbitrator is going to expect us to put in the legwork. So if all you receive is a HIMP-1 form, proof of service, and a payment ledger, and you say to yourself, wait a minute, where are the HICFAs? Where are the treatment records? I don't have to pay this. The arbitrator is going to disagree with you. It is our obligation to get the records. Their failure to include them, if they've given us everything else that 6.3C says they have to give us, is not fatal to the HIMP-1 demand. It is on us to get the records thereafter. So just something to keep in mind. All right, let's talk about objecting to the HIMP. So we have to observe our objection with, we have to serve our objection within 90 days of the HIMP-1 service date. Again, that's right under part one of the HIMP form. The parties can agree to extend that in writing. We have to object on part two of the HIMP form, falls right under part one, but you can still support your objection with documents or evidence. Specifically, if you are raising, we have already paid for this as an objection, or the fee schedule as an objection, those two require actual proof. You're going to need to include proof of payment to the provider if you're saying, I already paid for this. An EOB is usually sufficient, EOB, EOR, whatever you want to call it. And if you're saying that the fee schedule knocks this amount down, you need to, you know, show your work like middle school math class. So proof of service is required. So we always make a copy of the envelope and sometimes include an affidavit of service itself. You can look at the specific objections in 6.4B. The higher the exposure, like once we start getting up into the 50K and above, I would include a full brief. I wouldn't just check off the boxes on part two. I'd have all of those boxes correspond to point headings in a legal brief that explains what the objection is and why you are raising this particular objection based on the facts. And we include medical records and testimony and whatever we need from the board file to support those objections. So just going to go through these quickly. These are your specific objections. These are the ones that are on the form and are listed in 6.4B. No ANCR or acceptance, untimely service, no causal relationship. Authorization was requested and denied, and the treatment was non-emergent. Payment in excess of the fee schedule. Bill should have been prorated with another provider. Carrier can't determine responsibility for payment from documents served. Again, they have to not have the information that 6.3C requires. For instance, if they only tell you what the provider billed and not what they paid, how are you supposed to make a determination on what to reimburse them? That's a good example. But if they give you their payment ledger and proof of mailing and proof of ANCR and the HIMP form. Do not raise this just because they failed to give you the medical records or the HICFA. You're going to lose on that. Prior payment to the provider. Again, you need proof for this one. Treatment after we close meds on a Section 32, Section 29 credit or offset, and finally, treatment outside the MTGs. We have catch-all and prohibited objections. So you'll see an other on the HIMP 1 form, number 12. You can interpose any objection that demonstrates the request for reimbursement should not be made. Just note the HIMP is not eligible for reimbursement or arbitration if there is no ANCR or acceptance of the claim. So acceptance or ANCR is a prerequisite to being even being able to proceed to arbitration. And I'm going to talk about that in a moment. Here's what you can object based on. No prior authorization under workers' comp law 13A5. Note that that's for special services costing over $1,000. If it's a procedure under the MTGs, like lumbar fusion, knee arthroplasty, one of those guys that specifically requires prior authorization, you can still raise that. That's treatment inconsistent with the guidelines. What this is treatment that, you know, is not within the guidelines that costs over $1,000. They just don't want carriers duking it out over the cost of the treatment when the claimant actually needs the treatment. So failure of the provider to file required notices. If the provider renders treatment and doesn't submit a C4, that's not a good enough basis for an objection. Treatment excessive or too frequent, again, unless it's outside the MTGs. Hospitalization excessive or unnecessary, unless inconsistent with MTGs. Just a brief tidbit on arbitration that's got some timelines here, and I'm going to reiterate the timelines in one summary slide in a little bit. The forum where this happens is the American Arbitration Association. You have to request an oral hearing, and if you're going to the point of arbitration, my guess is it's a pretty high exposure HIMP. So this is basically always recommended in writing within 14 days of the ARB request. That is different than the ARB acknowledgement. The ARB request, remember, is part three of the form that's filled out. It's 14 days from the date that's on that. So you might not get that for 7 days after they put it in the mail to the AAA and then CC'd you on it. That would mean you have 7 days from the date that's on that form to get a request for an oral hearing to the American Arbitration Association. There's a $475 fee for it. It has to be in writing. You got to send it via fax. So you really have to get moving on it relatively quickly. You have a 14-day period to object based on improper or untimely service after the American Arbitration Association issues their acknowledgement. So the acknowledgement, conversely, is different than the ARB request itself. There's the part three filled out on the HIMP 1 form itself, and then there's a letter that comes on the AAA's letterhead that says, this will serve as acknowledgement of your request for arbitration. That triggers this 14-day period to object based on improper or untimely service. Remember, we talked about how lack of ANCR or acceptance is an affirmative defense to the arbitration itself. This is the time period where you're making that specific objection. Or if the HIMP is untimely on its face, you know, they didn't serve it within the time required, they didn't get a match within the time required, or they didn't request arbitration within the time required, that is another objection to raise in the first 14 days of the acknowledgement. Either party can be represented by counsel and present witnesses. As a practical matter, you're really, I mean, outside of having somebody to testify to the fee schedule, witness testimony is going to be limited. Occasionally, providers are going to get dragged into it. Occasionally, the claimant will get dragged into it. It's not all that common. Any new objections or evidence must be served within 14 days of the acknowledgement for a desk hearing, or at least 14 days before the oral hearing if one was requested. And you have to include an affidavit and proof of service. The decision is supposed to be in writing within 30 days of completion of the hearing. The award is supposed to be paid within 30 days of that. Any request for reconsideration has to be made within 15 days. And finally, appeals are subject to CPLR Article 75, so appeals are going to take place in civil court. All right, let's get to the good stuff. Practical advice, and then we're going to go over some examples. So I want you guys to watch out for informal demands, fishing expeditions, and scare tactics. What do I mean by this? You get a letter that says, hey, we've paid for treatment. We think this is a comp case. Is it a comp case? Give us the details. Send us a check. And then 30 days later, they say, you now only have 60 days to respond. Please tell us if this is a comp case. And if it is, give us money. That is one where I'm picking up the phone and saying, serve me with a HIMP or you're not getting a dime. Make sure your fee schedule calculation is defensible if necessary. The bigger the demand, the less I recommend doing it in-house. You're going to want somebody who's going to be able to show up to the arbitration and testify as to how the calculations were done. A vendor can do that for you. Remember that the filing of an MG2 is the doctor's admission that the treatment is inconsistent with the MTGs. So if an MG2 was filed and it was denied, the health insurer does not get to second guess that. The doctor themselves has said this is not consistent with the guidelines such that I need an approval of a variance. The health insurer can't then say, actually, it is consistent with the guidelines. That is your best proof if it's a guidelines issue. You can object based on failure to file a C4 auth if it's one of those procedures that requires prior authorization. We talked about that. You can use the PAR system to argue MTGs are denied treatment. Now there's a request for confirmation that treatment's in accordance with the MTGs. I have yet to see this litigated, but, you know, I mean, depending on the exposure in the case, why not argue that that was a request for approval and now it's you're saying no and it's inconsistent? And I want you to just remember the new medical treatment guidelines, new-ish, almost 2 years at this point, for treatment after May 2nd, 2022. All of the general issues like the basis for surgery, repeat diagnostic studies, all of those things that take something outside of the guidelines now almost apply across the board, in addition to the specific treatments being regulated. So just remember those additional sites. Part two, if you're not sure whether an objection applies, raise it anyway. Let them tell you it doesn't apply. Worst case scenario, you go to arbitration and the arbitrator says, yeah, I don't agree with this. That is different from making a frivolous objection. If you don't have another applicable objection, like one that's actually viable, obviously don't, you know, just object for the heck of it. If you have a viable objection, though, one that you can hang your hat on and you're not sure whether another one applies, raise it anyway. Why not? Be wary of serving an incomplete objection. We talked about that. You got to do it on part two of the form. You need proof of service, proof of mailing. If you're going to do fee schedule or prior payment, you need to include proof of your calculations or proof of the prior payment. The higher the exposure, the more I want an objection brief with exhibits so I don't have to worry about, you know, scrambling to submit all of that within 14 days once the acknowledgement comes out. So, you know, just keep in mind to not serve an incomplete objection here. If nothing else, attach your fee schedule analysis and check off any even potentially applicable objections before serving part two of the HIMP 1 form. The fee schedule is going to apply in 99% of the cases. I don't know why at minimum you wouldn't always raise that. Ask for an extension if you need it, but make sure you do something within the first 90 days or almost every argument is going to be waived. And that includes the fee schedule. So, you know, the date served under the part one of the HIMP form, you've 90 days from that date. And if you do absolutely nothing, you've basically forfeited the full amount on that demand. If you're past 90 days, there's a couple things you can try. Try getting an extension on the basis of investigation into the meds. Object anyway in case the arbitrator will let it slide. Try to secure a settlement for the fee schedule or raise your never waived defenses. We talked about how it's ineligible for arbitration. You know, if there's no ANCR acceptance or no full match, defective service, that's another objection you can raise within 14 days of the acknowledgement. And again, the fee schedule, you know, technically that one's also waived, but it's not going to stop me from raising it just in case I can get away with a lesser arbitration award. All right, five golden rules, the things we're going to take away from this, and then I'm going to go into some practical examples here. Determine whether it's a HIMP one or it's a fishing expedition at the outset. Determine whether there's ANCR or acceptance for the treatment in the HIMP. If not, that's an immediate objection. Determine any other permissible objections. Under no circumstances, pay anything over the fee schedule. And at bare minimum, object in writing on part two of the HIMP 1 form with all potentially applicable objections within 90 days. All right, just some preemptive defense measures here. Consider setting an address for service of HIMPs and stipulating to it with HIMP agents or health insurance carriers. This prevents the issue of a demand being served all over the building, going to your mailroom, getting lost in transmission, whatever the case may be. Sometimes demands are served and they just never make it to the claims professional's desk for whatever reason. So you can set up an address that says it must be served here to be valid. They can stipulate to that. And then if they don't adhere to that, well, then you can say it was not properly served. If you're getting repeat HIMP ones with the same providers, consider a letter to the HIMP agent or health insurer advising of a preemptive objection and arguing that they're intentionally circumventing the Workers' Compensation Board process. Consider placing the providers on notice if they keep billing the health insurer, and you can seek a board ruling with a CA.1A or RFA.2, including the CA.1A. The CA.1A has largely been rolled into the RFA.2 at this point, and it really doesn't do much, but I have seen carriers be able to get the board to say provider must submit records and bills through the board or else the carrier is not liable for payment. And that is enough to hang your hat on going forward. So if they just keep doing this over and over and over again, I'd file the RFA too. Address potential HIMPs in a Section 32. We talked about that. If the HIMP comes in while compensability is being litigated or is on appeal, object immediately. That starts the 90-day clock running for them to request arbitration before the adverse board ruling comes in. And consider moving for a stay of arbitration when warranted in high exposure HIMPs. Prior demand with no arbitration request, no ANCR acceptance, no evidence of a full match, etc., or moving for immediate dismissal of arbitration. Again, we talked about you can have affirmative defenses to the arbitration itself raised within 14 days of the acknowledgement. All right, putting it all together. So process starts with the insurer getting a full match. They serve a demand thereafter. Look at the date form mailed just above part two. You have 90 days from that date to take some action, object, get an extension, whatever the case may be. The bigger the demand, the more aggressive the response. You can get away with just completing part two and attaching the fee schedule and proof of service, but consider a full brief in high exposure cases. I really do recommend it. Here are the timelines. I said I would give you a little summary slide. So they have 3 years from the date the treatment was paid for to get a full match. They have a year from ANCR or acceptance, the date the treatment was paid for or the full match date to serve. You have 90 days to respond. They then have 90 days from your response or 90 days from when your response would have been due. So basically 180 days after it was served to request arbitration. 14 days from the arbitration request is your time frame to ask for an oral hearing. Again, that's the part three of the HIMP form. That's not the arbitration acknowledgement. You're technically, or you're usually pretty under the gun for that one. 14 days from the acknowledgement letter from the AAA to challenge timeliness or service. We talked about our affirmative defenses. 14 days from the acknowledgement letter for a desk hearing, or at least 14 days before an oral hearing if you're going to submit new evidence. And again, in a high exposure HIMP, that's why I'm just doing a full objection brief with exhibits at the time I object, because I don't want to fall into this trap of not submitting stuff timely. It's all on the record if I do it in the initial objection. All right, here's what everyone's here for. Actually, let's go through these one by one just for fun. So ANCR was in 2022. The match was in 2019. Some services were paid for in the last year. Others were paid for before that. Is that payable under the HIMP rules and regulations? In part, only the expenses from the past year are timely. The match was back in 2019. ANCR is not within the past year. The only measure of timeliness they got at this point is the paid date. So if the paid date wasn't in the past year, it's now untimely. Treatment paid for in 2019, ANCR in 2023, but match not until 2024. Payable? This is a tricky one. No. Remember we said they have 3 years from the date treatment was paid for to get a match from the board. Doesn't matter that ANCR was in the past year. They didn't get a match timely. There's a 3 year timeline and then to get the match and then the 1 year timeline to serve. So keep those two timelines distinct. Match was not obtained within 3 years of the date of payment for services. That's not payable. HIMP was served a year ago. Carrier never responded, but ARB was never requested. And now they're requesting ARB. Payable? Nope. Health insurer did not request ARB within 90 days when objection would have been due and thus has waived ARB rights. It's 185 days is the actual timeline after the date they served it. So lest anyone think I'm encouraging you to sit back and do nothing because they'll just lose the right to arbitrate, please do not do that. Again, please do something within the first 90 days at minimum, fill out part two and include proof of service. But if nothing else, if you didn't respond and within 185 days of the date of service, they didn't request arbitration, technically it's now too late for them as well. The HIMP is definitely timely, but ANCR is on appeal. Payable? Maybe. Objecting right away starts the 90-day timer for the arbitration, but a knowledgeable HIMP agent is actually going to ask you for an extension. Side note, this is a good one to settle. That's where you get on the phone and you say, hey, your demand is 100K. Fee schedule is 30. There's a 50-50 shot of us winning on the appeal. I'll give you 15 to make this go away. Bear in mind, if the appeal comes back and you lose, you've now lost all leverage. And most of them are going to say, hey, can we have an extension of our time to request arbitration until the decision comes back? You can't unreasonably refuse to grant that. So these are ones that are really good candidates for settling. All right. No other objections apply, but there are CA.1Bs for this exact treatment previously resolved in your favor. Payable? Probably not. I'd say no. It's not a specifically delineated objection. It's not, you know, on the 1 through 11, but it's not prohibited either. So there's a collateral estoppel argument to be made here. You can fill out, you know, the Part 12 other under Part, or Number 12 other under Part 2 of the HIMP form and say, Board has already ruled carrier is not liable for payment. See attached CA.1Bs. Why not? It's not prohibited. In my opinion, it's a pretty darn good argument. They shouldn't be permitted to relitigate compensability in a different forum. Treatment for PT, physical therapy following lumbar fusion. And just to be clear, it's treatment to rehabilitate the lumbar fusion. C4 auth, or nowadays MTG special services under PAR, was never submitted. Is this payable, the PT after the lumbar fusion? No, we would deny this if it were coming through contemporaneously. This is a whole fruit of the poisonous tree argument here. The treatment is outside the MTGs. We never authorized it. If the PT is to rehabilitate that surgery, we are going to be denying that in the workers' comp case on the basis of causal relationship and unauthorized treatment. So I would be doing the exact same thing for the HIMP as well. Whole fruit of the poisonous tree argument here. HIMP served 4 months ago. Carrier never responded, and the health insurer requests ARB. This is different from the fact pattern on the prior page. Payable? Yes, in full. Technically, even the fee schedule objection is waived now, even though I would still try to settle for the fee schedule if they're willing to negotiate. I don't know why they would be. You've pretty much lost all leverage at this point. I put this one on here to make the point that you can't just rest on your laurels. Best practices, you know, is to object, but this is going to be payable in full. You've lost everything if they request ARB within 185 days of service and you never responded. HIMP is definitely timely. Treatment is authorized. Demand is $300,000. Time to object has not lapsed. Payable? Yes, but only at the fee schedule rate, provided you raise that as an objection. All right. Let's give you some practical takeaways, and then I'll check to see if there are any questions here. Never just pay the HIMP one. We talked about that. You can always object. You can always investigate. You have options. Remember, your worst-case scenario is the fee schedule amount, provided that you object to it on those grounds. So, you know, don't let a $50,000 demand scare you if you timely objected and you have a $10,000 fee schedule calculation that you attach to your objection. The HIMP rules and regulations literally limit the arbitration award itself to the fee schedule amount. So that is your worst case scenario if you raised it timely and properly. Make sure the demand is compliant and legitimate. I talked about those fishing expeditions. Run through the objections in Part 2 of the HIMP 1 form one by one. Is there ANCR? Was it properly served? You know, is it timely, etc.? Causal relationship. Go through them one by one. It's the best way to see if they apply. You can raise non-delineated objections if not specifically prohibited. I gave you the example of the CA.1B, for instance. You must do something in the first 90 days. Get an extension. Serve your response. Whatever. Get on the phone and say, hey, I'm looking at this. Just do something within the first 90 days or you're going to lose all of your arguments. Ask for extension if needed. Remember, the AAA is going to expect us to investigate. If they didn't include the records, the arbitrator is going to expect that we went out and tried to get the records. Don't be afraid to arbitrate and push for an oral hearing. Most of the time, the health insurer just wants some money. So this is why I said, you know, the bigger the demand, the more I would do an objection brief. The more shock and awe and, you know, intimidation tactic approach you take, the more likely there's going to be a favorable resolution here. They just want some money. So if you get on the phone and offer them, you know, 50% of the fee schedule with, you know, leveraging semi-viable objections, a lot of the time, they're just going to bite on it. Look to resolve bulk HIMP 1 submissions in a global settlement, but don't offer payment on HIMPs that are truly not payable. A lot of times, you'll get a bulk demand from one of these HIMP agents that includes, you know, a dozen or more HIMPs at once, I would look at those globally altogether and figure out what the fee schedule amount is, figure which ones are or are not payable, and arrive at a lump sum that makes sense to you. And a lot of times, you know, like I mentioned, sometimes you can come in at, you know, 50% under of the fee schedule amount. So there's savings to be had there. And finally, always object to very large HIMPs protectively, even when you're discussing settlement. Your worst case scenario is they go, you know what, we're just not going to reach a deal on this, and you never timely objected. Bye-bye, there go all your viable arguments. So I would always get the objection out first if it's like 50K or more, and then I'd pick up the phone just to be safe. All right, let's see if we got any questions before we wrap up for this month. I will take that to mean I did a fantastic job because I do not see any questions. So thank you as always for attending. Hope everyone's enjoying this lovely spring weather we're finally getting, and I will see you all next month.